This is Radio Superior 1945, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1945. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the Great Lakes station, KUWS. Jack McKenna broadcasting to you from the top of Old Main on the campus of Superior State Teachers College, reminding you to back the attack. It's 6 o'clock Central Standard Wartime, Thursday, February 22nd, 1945. Lou Martin is standing by with the war news, and we have a special treat for you folks, too. The Duluth Harbor Masters will be performing for us tonight. How about that, Lou?
I'm afraid that I'm not a big fan.
But the music's great.
Even so, I'm not a big fan.
No, all righty then. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Rudolph's Furniture, where they have victory mattresses for just $11.95. Take up to 1 year to pay. And good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. The Marines have pledged to take Iwo Jima regardless of cost. This week's invasion of the Japanese islands is the toughest ever faced by the Leathernecks. We begin our shortwave radio world roundup off Iwo Island with Daryl Berrigan.
This is invasion headquarters on the fleet flagship off Iwo Jima, Daryl Berrigan reporting. Admiral Chester Nimitz has pledged to take Iwo Jima, whatever the cost. It appears that cost will be high. Pacific Marine Corps Chief Lieutenant General Holland Smith says the invasion of Iwo is the most difficult mission of the Pacific War. General Smith says they are up against a very tough proposition, but they will take the island no matter what the cost in blood. A communique announcing a slow drive toward Iwo's central airport said that Marine casualties are high. That's 385 killed and more than 4,100 wounded by yesterday, the third day of the battle. At a press conference on his flagship overseeing the invasion, General Smith was grim, his voice low, his lips tense. Quoting him, "We expect to take this island, but the cost will be severe," unquote. At night, Japanese emerge from underground havens and counterattack. By midday today, the Leathernecks slug slowly forward in different directions. One is the central airdrome, the other is the high ground, Mount Suribachi. I have seen the ferocity of the battle. It was revealed as this combat correspondent observed the invasion beach. It was indescribable wreckage, all of it ours. A two-mile belt of the Iwo Beach northward to Suribachi was a thick layer of debris, wrecked boats, dead marines. Death is not a pretty sight, but it has taken possession of this beach. Volcanic sand is difficult. It slides out from underfoot and doesn't allow invasion force vehicles to get traction. Instead, many vehicles are mired down in the open only to be blasted by Jap guns. Marines killed on the beach are buried in this sand. The miracle is that we were able to supply our troops at all. Much of it was by hand, as even the incomparable Jeep was getting stuck. This is the largest Marine invasion landing of the war. 40,000 men going toe-to-toe with fanatical Jap defenders. On the southern end of the island today, Marines began an assault on the face of Mount Suribachi. U.S. warships are continuing a steady invasion-long bombardment on the island. A force of Japanese planes attacked the convoy at sunrise this morning, causing what Admiral Nimitz said was some damage. With the invasion fleet off Iwo Jima, this is Daryl Berrigan, calling Europe. Come in, Germany.
This is Germany. Lewis Lochner here with General George Patton's Advancing Third Army. Blood and Guts Patton is running high, wide and handsome today. He stormed within 5 miles of Trier, crossed the Saar River against disintegrating German resistance and swept up 33 Nazi towns along the way. Tanks and infantry are within sight of the main defense works of Trier, a German city of 88,000 souls. It's believed to be the keystone city of defense of the central Rhine region of the Third Reich. While Patton's Third Army advanced, Lieutenant General Alexander Patch's Seventh Army smashed into the district from the south, advancing just 2 miles from the ruined city of Saarbrücken.
General Patch's men were confronted by heavy German weapons, but it was old men and boys who were doing the firing. The Yanks were face to face with the raw recruits of the Nazi Volkssturm. On top of that, the Canadian First Army in the north pounded to within a mile of the fiercely contested Kalka in its drive to the industrial Ruhr Valley. Despite the spectacular gains of the Third Army and slow progress of the British and Canadian troops in the north, it was evident that General Eisenhower had not let loose the full-scale offensive expected to bring Germany to her knees. With the Third Army in Germany, this is Lewis Lochner. I'm Colin Sweet. Come in, Stockholm.
Stockholm reporting here, Gramberg, your correspondent. I have just left Berlin, city of the doomed. The arrival there of German army deserters helped spread a sort of creeping paralysis of Berlin's 5.5 million bewildered, barricaded, and bomb-dulled inhabitants. I got away in an automobile which no amounts of money in the world could buy. Instead, the two old suits, some socks and ties, and 2 pounds of coffee turned the trick. As the front moved closer and closer to Berlin, more deserters slipped into the capital. Mothers wandered desperately for ways to hide their sons as a Nazi spokesman urged all Germans to turn in deserters. Severe punishment was promised for those hiding them. Berlin's fall may not come as fast as most persons seem to believe. It will be weeks before the Russians can break the Berlin outer defense and reach the city limits. The first backbone of the very strong reserves is stationed at the Oder, and those fortifications must be broken. Then the Red Army faces the suburbs, and then the city itself, with its tens of thousands of barricades, mines, and ruins transformed into fortresses. Fortifications block every city street. As I drove through Berlin, it took me 90 minutes to travel 6 miles. Even so, if everything goes on schedule for the Allies, Berlin should fall in another 6 to 8 weeks, perhaps in mid to late April. As for Berliners, there is no place for them to go and no means of travel. So the population is swelling as refugees from outside crowd their way into what soon may be the last piece of Hitler's Third Reich. In Stockholm, this is Jerry Granberg calling America. Come in, San Francisco.
This is the Naval Port of San Francisco. Stan Turner here. The first prisoners of war liberated in that daring Ranger assault at Cabanatuan prison camp on Luzon are stateside, and they're preparing to return home after 3 years of cruel and capricious treatment by the Japanese regime. 26-year-old seaman Lynn Brotherson of Erie, Pennsylvania, the only prisoner wounded in the escape, telephoned his mother today. He told her, "The first thing I want is a home-cooked meal." He was at 3 different prison camps after the fall of Corregidor in 1942, and quoting Seaman Brotherson, "There was no mercy shown to those who tried to escape or were caught. They were shot," unquote. Another of the former prisoners here, 38-year-old Lieutenant Emmett Manson of Worthington, Minnesota, was also disgusted by the Japanese treatment. Quoting him, "You get an idea of what a swell place Cabanatuan was when you remember that 2,700 of the 5,000 prisoners are still there, buried." Lieutenant Manson arrived here yesterday with 45-year-old Lieutenant Earl Baumgartner of Yonkers, New York, and 50-year-old Lieutenant George Green of Auburn, Alabama. Average weight loss during captivity of these men was 62 pounds. Since their liberation on January 28th, they've gained about half of that back. When he first heard the shots, Lieutenant Manson thought they were being massacred. Then he said a big Ranger appeared, said, "I'm an American," and told them to head for the main gate. That Ranger was also a Minnesotan, Lyle Fisher of Fergus Falls, and the ambulance driver was Rudy Matich of Virginia, Minnesota. All 4 former prisoners are headed home. In San Francisco, this is Stan Turner.
Only scattered Japanese resistance continues on Corregidor and Manila. The last remnant is a fanatical attempt by Japanese soldiers to hold the second floor of the famed Manila Hotel. General Douglas MacArthur says Bataan Peninsula has been cleared of the enemy. The Senate Military Affairs Committee has passed the Work or Fight Bill. It includes fines and prison terms for employers who hoard labor. A fistfight broke out on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives. Representative Hook of Michigan and Representative Rankin of Mississippi exchanged blows after Congressman Hook called him a liar. The white-haired Rankin shouted, "I don't take that kind of talk from anyone," and he dashed across the aisle to lock his arms around Hook's neck. The struggle lasted for a minute before their colleagues broke them up. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Jack McKenna has these words from our sponsor.
So, the honorable congressman from Mississippi had his learned colleague from Michigan in a headlock?
And they were both Democrats.
Okay, guys, you can help me out here.
Okay.
You don't often see values like these, folks, and these values are from Rudolph's Furniture in Superior. Save at these low prices. For example, a Victory mattress covered in fancy floral art ticking. A good, dependable mattress at a very low price, just $11.95. And how about a luxurious Innerspring Construction two-piece living room suite for just $198? You only have to pay $3.50 weekly. Large occasional chair with comfortable seat in case you want to sit occasionally. And a shapely high back, too, richly upholstered in choice of attractive covers. A bargain at this very low price, just $9.95. And that's at Rudolph's Furniture, folks, a great place to shop. Lou,
Superior boy who was captured after the fall of Corregidor, is apparently still alive. Lieutenant Dean Wood, nephew of East End Postmaster Leon Wood, was liberated from a Philippine prison camp by American forces. The parents of Private James Lohr of Superior were told that their son was killed in Germany February the 6th. Private Lohr entered the service last August, served in the infantry. Two brothers are also in the service. Private First Class Ernest Alexander of Drummond was also listed as killed in action. He's survived by his wife, Doreen. Private First Class Alex Bong of Superior was killed. His mother, Ellen, was notified today. In all, nearly 1,500 men were on the list of killed in action released today by the War Department. 22-year-old Sergeant Hans Anderson of Ashland was wounded in action. His parents, Mr. and Mrs. Ed Anderson, were told that he was wounded in Germany December the 31st. Sergeant Anderson entered the service November of 41. He's been overseas since July of 1942. First Sergeant Reuben Hudson of Superior was wounded while fighting with the spearhead of the First Army in Germany. He's in a hospital in England. Other men listed as wounded from this region, but no other information available, includes Lieutenant Stanley Muskowitz of Superior and Private First Class Frederick Whitney of Spooner. Congressman Elvin Okonski is accusing the Russians of using Nazi tactics to get control of Poland. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson reports.
Thanks, Lou, and good evening. 10th District Congressman Okonski of Mercer spoke in reply to a Soviet newspaper editorial. Okonski says Pravda is being selective with its facts and memory when it says he was wrong to criticize the Big Three conference in Yalta. He says Pravda's technique is identical to Nazi propaganda chief Joseph Goebbels. If you don't agree 100%, then you are an enemy of the state. In this case, Pravda accused Okonski of being a fascist. Mr. Okonski says Poland was handed over to Soviet Premier Joseph Stalin by President Roosevelt and Prime Minister Churchill at the Yalta Conference, instead of the government in exile now in England. He says that's wrong, especially since Stalin collaborated with Hitler in 1939 to start the war by attacking Poland. Okonski, of Polish descent, claims that 7 million of Poland's 35 million people have been killed in the war. Poland's reward is to be stabbed in the back by the Allies. Lou?
KUWS radio reporter Mike Simonson. Yesterday was the last day to file for Ashland City election. Four men filed to run for mayor. Former Ashland Assemblyman Harry Van Gilder, James Nemec of Nemec and Tobias Clothing Store, and businessman Bernard Ortman will challenge the incumbent mayor, Gus Johnson. Bayfield's fire hall was completely destroyed by fire Tuesday morning. A coal stove exploded, and the two men on duty fled without being able to save any of the fire equipment. The neighboring town of Washburn has lent Bayfield a fire hose. Northland College in Ashland will go on a building spree once the war is over. The Board of Trustees has approved putting $25,000 toward building a new dormitory, gymnasium, and science building. And finally, Jack and good listeners, Wisconsin residents who have been groping in the dark to do their farm chores and work in defense plants in the darkness of winter mornings may not have to get up so early. The State Assembly has passed a bill putting Wisconsin on Mountain Time instead of Central Time. Opponents say the bill would mean that there'd be Wisconsin time and then there'd be everybody else's time. It still must pass the Senate, Jack.
Can you imagine the confusion of our poor neighbors in Duluth? They'd have to change their watch every time they came across the bridge to Superior. And what would that make your 6 o'clock news?
Well, it would still be 6 o'clock news, but it would be an hour later.
Making it the 7 o'clock news.
No, it would still be the 6 o'clock news.
But in Duluth, it'd be 7 o'clock. And I have no idea what time it would be here or there if it was daylight savings time.
Then it would be 8 o'clock in Minnesota.
I think it would be 5 o'clock. If it was 6 o'clock Mountain Central wartime.
I shouldn't have even read the story.
Lou Martin, the Big Ben of newsmen. Let's check our forecast for this Thursday evening, February 22nd, 1945. Cloudy with light snow tonight with a low of 12 degrees. Then partly sunny tomorrow and a high near 30. And it's music time, friends, and the Harbor Masters is in for some live entertainment. Hit it, guys.
The old songs, the old songs, the good old songs for me. I love to hear those
some of the old-time favorites by the Duluth Harbor Masters. We'll get back to these fellows, but first, this important wartime word from the Northland Greyhound Lines. It is vital that all of us step up our efforts by buying additional war bonds, by giving blood, and by sticking to essential war jobs. We'd like to invite you onto our Greyhound bus lines, but for now, we'll ask you to see America later. After victory, highways will be happy ways again. Greyhound's all-important job today is moving manpower, men and women in uniform, war workers, and essential travelers. But Greyhound is planning for those post-war days, so we say to you now, as we have said since Pearl Harbor, serve America now. See America later. Okay, guys, want to do another one?
Yes, 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 yes.
You don't talk much, do you?
We love to sing, sing, sing.
There. That's nice, nice, nice on the Martin and McKenna Show.
My wild Irish rose, the sweetest flower that grows. You may search everywhere, but none can compare with my wild Irish rose, Irish rose. My wild Irish rose, my rose, the dearest flower that grows. And someday for my sake she may let me take the bloom from my wild Irish rose, my rose. The bloom from my wild Irish rose, wild Irish rose.
The Duluth Harbor Masters with one of my favorites. So, have you guys been doing this long?
Yes, 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 yes.
You know, it's okay to talk, too.
We're kind of
shy, shy, shy.
My.
Let me introduce entertainment editor Harriet Feurig.
You haven't said much this evening, Lou.
I'm rather phobic about barbershop quartets. Kind of like you are with Santa Claus.
Bad dreams, eh?
I'd rather not discuss it. Harriet, if you would continue.
Lewis is very sensitive about certain things, Jack, and I'm sure it's nothing personal, guys.
You'd be surprised how many people are unnerved by barbershop quartets.
He talked.
Well, singers can talk.
Just like runners can walk.
And pitchers can balk.
And boxers can sock.
And locksmiths can lock.
Oh.
Well, at least it rhymed.
Yes, Jack. There are so many good movies for the family playing. At the Princess Theater, enjoy a western starring Don Red Berry as Red Rider in Black Hills Coach. The Superior Theater is showing a double feature. Maisie Goes to Reno, Go Crazy Over Maisie, with Ann Southern. Then it's Orchestra Wives with Cesar Romero and Ann Landis featuring Glenn Miller and his orchestra. It's hap. It's hilarious. It's hot.
Hot, 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 hot.
Enjoy some real entertainment with the Merry Monahans, starring Donald O'Connor and Peggy Ryan with Jack Oakey at the Beacon Theater. Get there early for a Disney cartoon. You'd like that, Jack. And finally, I have to say this was one of my very favorites.
Harriet's favorite.
The Palace Theater is showing the motion picture Meet Me in St. Louis with Judy Garland and Margaret O'Brien.
Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Zing, zing, zing went the bell.
It's in Technicolor, too. Well, that's all, Jack and Lewis.
Okay, guys, let's hear another one.
Let me call you sweetheart, I'm in love with you. Let me hear you whisper that you love me too. Keep the love light glowing in your eyes so. Sweetheart, I'm in love with you.
Another favorite number by the Duluth Harbor Masters. How long have you guys been doing this?
Long, 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 long time.
We were all waiting for a haircut at Curly's Barbershop.
Good old Curly. He's bald as a cue ball.
Some women find smooth heads quite attractive.
So, Curly's taking his time with Lars Johansson in the chair.
They're always talking about curling this time of year.
Yeah, Curly loves curling.
So, one of us starts humming to the radio. Don't you know they're playing Daisy on the radio right then and there?
So we all chime in, and here we are.
It didn't sound so good, though.
You needed lots of practice, I suppose.
No, it was because Lars was singing along. He can't hold a note if it had handles on it.
But at least the poor guy tried.
Jeez, Lou, you sound a little angry.
How uncharacteristic of you, Louis.
It's just that at one time I tried out for a barbershop quartet. Oh, I didn't make the cut.
You have to be able to cut if you're going to be in a barbershop quartet.
Sorry, Lou. Everyone is talented at some things, but no one is talented at everything. You know, you're great with the news.
But I like to sing, too.
Now, there's always the shower, Lou.
Hey, guys, how about this? We dedicate our last number to Lou and let him be part of it.
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. My skin crawls rather easily.
Every time I point to you, Lou, you say or sing something, okay?
Can I join in, please?
A woman in a barbershop quartet?
Why not? Jump in when you can, Harriet.
I will.
Heart of my heart,
heart.
I love you.
You.
Life would be not without you.
You.
Light of my life, my darling, I love you.
You.
I love you.
You.
I can forget you never. From you I ne'er can sever. Say you'll be
Wow, Mr. Tone Deaf himself, Lou Martin. Well, anyway, that was great. You guys are great. I can see why you'd rather sing than talk.
Well, there's another reason why we don't talk very often, because when we open up the spigot, it's hard to turn it off. Right, boys? Oh, boy, you got to hear it. Everybody's talking all at once. You know how that works, you know?
Yeah. Right. Next, we'll see Pussy Willows poking
okay,
out.
Okay, guys, no more talking.
Wow, what a little pent-up demand.
I think one of the guys made some crack about me in there somewhere.
That's it, folks. Stay tuned tomorrow morning for Onilaina with the Finnish newscast at 6:30. Then Alex Dreyer with the early bird news. And at 8 o'clock, it's I've Got Your Number. And we'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing.
Oh, Lordy, 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 Lordy.
For the good fellows at the Duluth Harbor Masters and our singing newsman, Lou Martin, this is Jack McKenna reminding you that war bonds mean freedom.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1945, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Paul Guggenheimer, Ray Paulson. All events reported on Radio Superior 1945 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.